Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
These are very serious charges and reflect a pattern of lies and dishonesty over an extended period of time. They are significant in their own rights. They are particularly significant when done by a lawyer who, through training and tradition, understands what it means to be a lawyer, to engage in honest and fair dealing and adherence to the law. Mr. Cohen disregarded that training, disregarded that tradition, and decided that he was above the law, and for that he was going to pay a very, very serious price.
It sounds like Michael Cohen has pleaded guilty and to assisting the president in making these payments.
Will he cooperate in a way that is at all damaging to Donald Trump?
That we have an unindicted co-conspirator of a federal crime sitting in the Oval Office.
So, had nothing to do with Russian collusion. We continue the witch hunt. Thank you very much.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan, and we're going live to tape, basically, here on TrumpCast. It is late in the day on August 21st, 2018, and this is the best infrastructure week yet. Here is the rundown. Paul Manafort, Donald Trump's former campaign manager, was found guilty on 8 of 18 counts in his Virginia trial on financial crimes. These counts include filing false tax returns, not filing a form to report a foreign bank account, and two instances of bank fraud related to loans totaling $4.4 million. The jury did deadlock on 10 other charges, including 7 for committing bank fraud or conspiring to commit bank fraud. He also has another trial coming up in D.C. on matters closer to TrumpCast's heart, money laundering, FARA violations, and the Trump campaign's connection to Russia, but we will save that for September. Meanwhile, on the other side of the split screen, Michael Cohen, the president's fixer. So we've got a campaign manager and a fixer lawyer. We're not talking about coffee boys today. Cohen made the mind-blowing admission in court under oath that he arranged payments to two women, playmate Karen McDougal, famous in my book for being in love with Donald Trump and attracted to him, and porn actress Stormy Daniels. He made those payments at Trump's behest to shut them up about affairs they said they had with the president. Cohen told a judge in United States District Court in Manhattan that the payments to the women were, quote, at the direction of the candidate and for principal purpose of influencing the election for president in 2016. Cohen has also pleaded guilty to multiple counts of tax evasion and bank fraud and, of course, breaking campaign finance law. What to make of this doubleheader of Cohen-Manafort Day? Joining me on the line is TrumpCast heroine Mimi Rocha, a former federal prosecutor in the Southern District of New York. Mimi Rocha, welcome back to TrumpCast.
Thank you.
So Manafort, the Manafort verdict has come in. He's guilty on 8 counts. There are 10 counts there's a mistrial on. But that is not the lead story today. The lead is Michael Cohen and his guilty plea on several counts. I think it's also 8 counts, right? I just help us make some sense of this plea.
So I think the plea is, as you say, really significant for a couple of reasons. It's not a plea pursuant to a cooperation agreement, as many people had been speculating. It's a plea, what we call a straight-up plea, to a plea agreement. So there's nothing in the agreement that I see that and under normal circumstances that would require him to provide information or testify with the government. That is a, depending on, you know, sort of which perspective you're looking at it from, that is either a good thing or a bad thing. But I still think it's very significant, in large part, because of what he said in his allocution, which I think is just huge. So he pled guilty to various charges, bank fraud, tax evasion, and campaign finance violation. And he admitted under oath in court that the campaign finance violations were done at the direction of a candidate for federal office.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't name Trump because that's generally not something that happens in federal court. You don't name people who aren't charged as defendants or unindicted co-conspirators. But it's very clear that I think that's who he's talking about. And, you know, that really, I think, cannot be underestimated in sort of its significance, because it isn't just him saying it, us reporting it. This is a sworn statement under penalty of perjury before a federal judge. So I think even though it's not a cooperation agreement per se, it shows a level of cooperation that he was willing to admit that under oath.
Yeah, I think I saw Preet Bharara just tweeted, Michael Cohen in a courtroom in SDNY under oath declared that the president directed him to commit a federal crime. And he said that he is rarely, I think he said something like, I'm rarely stunned, but I'm stunned this time. I mean, do you feel that way right now? You know,
yeah,
I am
stunned in the sense that, you know, first of all, a little bit just in the process. I mean, the way this came about, I think, is different than what everyone expected, that it would either be sort of, oh, he's cooperating or he's not. And this is a little bit of a hybrid almost that I really haven't seen much of, which is interesting in and of itself. But yeah, it's huge that, exactly as Preet, of course, said it very well, he has now said that the president of the United States, while he was running for office, while he was trying to get the American public to vote for him, directed Cohen to commit a crime. Mm-hmm. And it also means that he was very much involved in the cover-up that came afterwards. I mean, not only, if you think about the lies, the number of lies now that we know were just false, complete falsehoods. Not, we always suspected it, we always thought it, but now, you know, we really know it, that both Trump, you know, and others on his behalf told on television and in other settings. And, you know, now the question is, did anyone lie under oath about this? I don't think there's been any testimony taken about it so far, but that would be another thing to look at. And it's possible that this could be a whole other sort of obstruction investigation in and of itself.
So I got a call before I got here from a former TrumpCast guest who had worked on McCain's campaign. He's worked on a bunch of campaigns. And he was pretty hyper, saying that this doesn't look good for the rest of the campaign. This was a small campaign, and it took at least a few days of the campaign, and that, you know, almost a certain chunk of those people can be presumed to know. That's, you know, Kellyanne Conway and Mike Pence and the rest of them. I mean, does that come to mind for you, or does that seem like overreaching?
I don't know. I don't think it's overreaching at this point. You know, it's sort of safe. It would be hard to sit here right now and say they all knew,
yeah.
But it also would be hard to sit here and say they definitely didn't know. You know, we knew that Michael Cohen was in on this because we knew that he was part of actually setting up the payments. It sounds like, you know, there's a really good chance now that the accountant, you know, who was mentioned on the recordings, that he likely knew.
Mm-hmm.
Whether other people on the campaign did or not, you know, if I had to speculate, I would say it seems very likely, but we'll have to sort of wait and see how that plays out.
Is it possible? I mean, the one thing, you know, while there was a kind of race to a certain finish line today with the Manafort trial and the Cohen plea, it occurred to me that Stormy Daniels might actually be the one to deal a fatal blow, or at least a seriously wounding blow, before the Russia affair. That's a surprise, or it was to me.
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be sort of coming to a head more quickly, I think in part because it's a little bit less complicated. And that may be why, in part, why we're seeing this, you know, I mean, this is fast for a plea agreement. I know it didn't feel fast to people, but this is pretty fast for, you know, the search of an office and just to go right to plea agreement and charges and plea agreement all at once. So they clearly were, you know, working quickly to get this done. And, you know, I think we'll see what the next chapter is. This still feels to me like a chapter in a book that's not done yet. And I don't just mean the Russia stuff. I mean, Michael Cohen.
Yeah. Oh, really?
You know, I think some people are speculating, well, he could still cooperate with the Southern District of New York. And that's true. He could. It's not unheard of to have someone after plea still go ahead and proffer, because that is a really lengthy process. And I think if you're trying to accomplish something quickly, you know, you might sort of put your stake down and then go ahead and have proffer sessions and work on other topics. And you can always plead later to a superseding information. That's what the term would be called with a cooperation agreement. I think that's pretty unlikely. I won't rule it out, but it's unlikely. But what seems plausible now is that Michael Cohen, you know, he still could be available to Mueller if he has information that's useful. And in some ways, this almost frees him up to be for that process to work more smoothly, because his criminal history, his other criminal conduct is sort of out of the way now. It's dealt with.
Yeah.
And he's more free to talk to Mueller without concern about that. It shows a level of cooperation with a little c on his part that might make him more seem more appealing to someone like Mueller, more trustworthy. And he also is now more open to subpoena. So normally you can't subpoena someone, obviously, because they'll invoke their Fifth Amendment right. Well, now Cohen, having pled to this, at least with respect to these charges, he doesn't, once sentencing is over, which could happen in the next couple of months, he will not have a viable Fifth Amendment right as to these charges. And so he's more susceptible to subpoena. Normally, prosecutors don't want to subpoena someone who's not a full-on cooperating witness and just put them on the stand without preparation. Mm-hmm. But again, I think here, having seen him with this huge admission in court under oath, it would be harder for him to change that story. They now have that under oath statement that they could use to impeach him if they ever needed to. If I were a prosecutor, it wouldn't seem so crazy now to subpoena him if you needed him for something else.
Interesting. I hadn't heard that. I was remembering something that Barrera said, I think, around the Flynn plea, ancient history, that you all typically had a strategy of not getting someone to plead guilty to a much lesser charge, to plead guilty to the highest charges, the most they've done. And that maybe for the reason that you just described, then you can't take the Fifth. Your lies are out, so you're potentially more accessible, more cooperative witness. So you think
right?
That,
well, Preet was talking about that in the context of cooperators.
Okay,
like
yeah,
full-on cooperation agreement.
And Cohen is not that yet. But do you think?
Correct.
Do you think that
may be one reason why he didn't go down that path? There may be a lot else he would have had to talk about and admit to. Maybe having to do with Trump. Maybe not. But maybe that was just too much. And this was a way to sort of get to a narrow. You know, they reached a plea agreement, which many defendants do. But he also made this under oath admission that could be, I think, important for the bigger picture here.
Yeah. It definitely, there's something about it just conjures Nixon or conjures, you know, the sort of end game of a presidency when someone confesses under oath that he's been directed to commit a crime by the president of the United States. I don't know how it's playing in West Virginia at the Trump rally, but it certainly, as you say, has a certain, there's a certain like cartoonish availability of this. So it's like
absolutely
hard to overlook.
And it seems like something that's harder for elected officials to ignore and put their head in the sand about. You know, this isn't just something we're hearing. This is something that someone swore to under oath. I'm not saying that everyone's going to jump up now and do the right, what I would consider doing the right thing, but it certainly makes it harder to ignore.
So there's the verdict is not entirely in from the curious players in the Senate and the Congress, but Lindsey Graham, ever an enigma, has already said no big deal because this doesn't mention Russia. And that seems to be the line of the Trump loyalists. I don't know. What do you make of that? I mean, that the Manafort has his other trial coming up, which is, of course, on the nose with Russia. And Michael Cohen, you know, it looks like his consultancy took donations from Victor Vexelberg and other Russian figures. So I don't think anyone's out of the woods yet on Russia. And also, this is bad in itself.
Right. I mean, Russia's not done yet. That's the bottom line. So for anyone to say that, you know, I mean, as Trump loves to say many times a day on Twitter, that there's no collusion and it's a witch hunt as to the Russia conspiracy, I don't, that's just calling the game before it's over.
Yeah.
But it's also a ridiculous standard. I mean, yes, that's what the special counsel is about, but that's not what the Southern District of New York was about.
Right.
That was referred to them. It came to the attention of the Department of Justice broadly because of that, but then it ended up in the Southern District of New York, where, as Rob Kuzami said in his press conference today, we do cases like this, you know, a lot, and our election laws are about, you know, transparency in elections and where money is coming from, and it's a big deal to say that the president directed you to commit a crime to cover something up from the American public in the election process. Mm-hmm. And then if you think about everything that came after that, that means he was 100% knowingly lying about all of that and trying to cover it up.
Right, and, all along.
You know, if that's not a big deal to Lindsey Graham, then I'm not sure he should be in politics anymore, because that's all about, you know, there's just no credibility left then in the system.
So in the so you mentioned the special counsel's office, and I want to get to I want to get to Manafort and to the hand of Mueller. But where do you detect? I mean, the strategy that seemed to be in evidence when the Cohen case was referred to SDNY, and when they really ran the Manafort trial with some of the lead prosecutors from the OSC. That split seemed strategic. It seemed interesting. But are we now seeing it pay off?
In terms of there being two different trials?
Yeah. And what's this like? Are we starting to be able to detect it, to tell a little bit better what this strategy is about? I mean, is it, I don't know, does it have something to do with pardons? I mean, I'm just not very good at this chess game. So,
well,
yeah.
You know, I could be wrong, but my understanding was that they had split the charges against Manafort, not because the special counsel wanted to, but because Manafort wouldn't agree to waive venue to some of the counts. And so they couldn't all be brought in one place. I could be wrong about that, but that was my memory and understanding. I think if whoever strategy it was, whether it was Manafort trying to be difficult and not give an inch, mm-hmm. And not have the counts tried together, or it was some strategic decision by the special counsel, I think it is turning out to benefit the prosecution, the government here, because you get two bites at the same apple, essentially. I think the verdict today, however one describes it, I think is a victory for the government. You know, they found him guilty of charges in all of the categories.
Yep.
You know, tax fraud, bank fraud, and false statements. The fact that they split the baby and found some guilty on some and not on others, that's actually pretty common with juries, especially in complex fraud cases.
You mean split
juries
the baby?
Love to compromise.
Right, split the baby because it seems especially judicious or something like that. Yeah,
and it really helps the government on appeal. I mean, I guarantee you it will be a big point in their brief that this was a very careful jury and, you know, a Court of Appeals, not that I think there were any main points for appeal, but between the judge that Manafort had, you know, who was looking out for him a lot, and this jury, he, you know, would have to have some really good claim on appeal to win.
We had another guest on this show who suggested that Manafort's reasons, this is like super speculative, but that Manafort's reasons for not flipping and just barely mounting a defense in the last week and a half was really that he's actually much more afraid of what his Russian overlords or Russia aligned overlords might do to him, that he'd, I think, rather be, he doesn't want to give them up. That makes sense to me more than courting a pardon. I don't know, just from his behavior.
Yeah. And I think, I've said that actually before.
Oh, you've said, yeah.
Myself, that I thought he was more afraid of the Russians than prison. I think the two sort of go together though, a little bit. I mean, it's easier to say, okay, I'm scared and I'm not going to cooperate, because you're right. I mean, cooperation normally does not, you can't just say I'm going to cooperate against Trump, but not against, you know, Russians who were involved.
Right.
It generally doesn't work that way. So he, I think, knows enough to know it would be an all or nothing endeavor, and that would be, it would be scary to cooperate against the Russians if he has information about them, which seems likely. But it's easier to say that and sort of not go down that path, mm-hmm. when you think you have the prospect of a pardon. And I will say there was something that happened during the trial that made me think they were really courting
the pardon.
During the defense closing argument, his lawyer went to a place that most defense attorneys really don't go because it's completely impermissible in court, which is he tried to suggest basically to the jury that Manafort, you know, had been targeted for who he was. He made some comment, I'm paraphrasing, like this could have been prosecuted back in whatever year and it wasn't. Now it's being prosecuted. Why do you think that is? There were a couple other comments where he clearly was trying to insinuate that he was being targeted because of his connection to the president.
Interesting.
Which at the beginning of the trial, Manafort had actually tried to keep any mention of the president out. So it felt like once he saw the strength of the defense and he was at this point, he made that comment seemed to me to be trying to play, you know, into Trump's statements that he always makes of, you know, poor Manafort, he got in trouble just because he worked for me.
And it, right. And all this was years ago and it's part of the effort to get me. And amazing he's using that with a jury, and maybe, we don't know, I guess, the proportions of the jury that made it hung, but, you know, if it was one or four or whatever, but that argument is so in the air that you could, you know, that there'd be at least one juror willing to, like, virtually nullify things or force a mistrial
The judge did give, at the government's request, an instruction to the jury saying, you're not allowed to consider that the motive of the government in bringing charges is not a consideration for a jury, which is very standard. And the defense attorney knew that, but he just wanted to get it out there. Hmm. And you're right. It may have had an impact on one juror. We'll never know. But they still, you know, did the right thing based on the evidence.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge day. Ideally, you'll be able to take tomorrow off. there won't be a Roger Stone or Don Jr. indictment.
Never know.
Thank you so much, Mimi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's it for today's show. Did you like it? Let me know by tweeting at RealTrumpCast or just tweeting at me, at Paige88. We'd love to hear your feedback. And what do you want to talk about next? What's important to you that's not getting covered as much as you think it should? Let us know again at RealTrumpCast on Twitter. Our show today was produced by Jason DeLeon. John DiDomenico is, as always, our voice of Donald Trump. I'm Virginia Heffernan, and thanks for listening to TrumpCast.